tira proveito daquilo que a equipa tem de melhor. Aproveita bem o...
Na equipa das esquinas, aí vem para ali fora o João Cancelo em grande velocidade, vai agora mais para a zona central, bate a bola para a direita, pode ser mais um, aí está Portugal, bola para ser cruzada, Ronaldo falhou, o remate ainda pontapé, golo! Golo! Cancelo!
Bom dia, boa tarde! Welcome to another episode of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. I'm your guest host, John Neves, back here again to talk about my favorite subject, your favorite subject, and that is, of course, Portuguese soccer, Portuguese football, whatever word you use in your part of the world. Episode 193, and it's a busy one. Let me unpack it for you. First off, we got a few thoughts on the national team. We've got European action back next week. I'll give you a little bit of a preview. This weekend, everything will be dominated, the attention by the Taça de Portugal, the domestic cup competition. Will we see any upsets this weekend? I've got a few predictions. We'll see if they come true. I'll have my usual Big Four report. Also talk about my club in the fifth tier, Atlético dos Arcos. And then, of course, I'll wrap it up with, which I have to say, by the way, a great listener mailbag this week. Got a lot of good questions, and I look forward to answering them toward the end of this episode. But let me start off first, because since I recorded my last episode, the national team did play twice, beating Slovakia in Porto 3-2, and then going to Bosnia-Herzegovina and winning 5-0 with all five goals coming in the first half. Look, we've got to be very happy. This is the first time, as you know, that they have won 8 straight in a row. They managed to clinch a spot in next summer's Euro in Germany with 3 matches remaining. And the reality of the matter is, everything is just going right for this team. Cristiano Ronaldo looks like the Cristiano we saw 3-4 years ago when he was scoring and seemingly at times looked to be the only person doing the scoring for Portugal. And everything is going well. Now, there are some people, though, that still want to wait on Roberto Martinez and giving him credit simply because of the fact that, well, a lot of people feel like Portugal hasn't played anybody yet. I mean, the toughest so far they've played is Slovakia, which looks like they'll finish at second place in this group. Again, they beat Slovakia and Slovakia only 1-0, came home and, of course, beat them 3-2 in a match that it got off to a start, 2-goal start, 2-0. Everybody thought maybe Portugal was going to cruise to another big win and it was going to be a lot of celebration in the Dragon, but that turned out not to be the case, and Slovakia did come back. And that's why some people are, while they're happy for the national team, they also want to have some careful optimism, because a lot of people feel that the national team hasn't really played anybody yet of significance. And Roberto Martinez, who's never lost a European qualifier as both Belgium and Portugal manager, a lot of people are worried that hopefully that what happened with Belgium doesn't repeat in Portugal with disappointment in the Euro. But the Euro is only next summer. We got to be happy with 8 wins in a row. We have to be happy with the fact that we're scoring a lot of goals. Be very curious to see next month. They play Liechtenstein. I mean, I just can't imagine Roberto Martinez is going to field his strongest lineup. We'll see players like João Neves, Rafael Leão, maybe a José Sá get the started goalkeeper. There's no reason whatsoever to be putting a bunch of players worth 70, 80 million release clauses, putting players like Cristiano out there against Liechtenstein. No business at all. But I am very curious to see what he will do next month. And then obviously the last match at home against Iceland, again, do you just play the younger players and maybe not call up all the best players, let them stay back in the Premier League or Germany or wherever they're from, Saudi Arabia, and let them relax and take it easy. But again, we also know that Roberto Martinez is trying to build this team for next summer with this philosophy. So that's probably why he may still call them all and at least keep them in camp to kind of give him his ideas, which so far are working. But again, let's just be happy that we qualified. We don't have to worry about a playoff like we did with the World Cup. Let's be happy that we're scoring. Let's be happy that Cristiano continues to break record. He's currently the leading goal scorer this year in calendar year 2023 with 40 goals. And let's just be happy. When Fernando Santos was manager, we wanted to see more goals, more excitement, and that was a bit of a frustration. We're getting that now. So I just think it's time to be very excited about that. And that's why I'm going to end it by saying here, I'm excited. Got a great question in the listener mailbag about Fernando Santos and Roberto Martinez that I'll answer at the end of this edition. But at the end of the day, great job by the Federation. Great job by the national team. Great job by Bruno Fernandes, who's probably been the best player throughout Europe in this European competition. Remember in the beginning when he wasn't doing a lot, especially whenever Cristiano would score? And it was a valid argument to make. He just wasn't scoring the way he was doing it with Sporting and Manchester United. And I always said, if Bruno can be Bruno, if Cristiano could be Cristiano and Bernardo could be Bernardo and, you know, everybody could just be at their best, this is a very good Portugal team. And I still believe that they can win the Euro next summer, but they've got to do it with everybody firing on all cylinders, everybody in high gear. And so far, that seems to be the case. But let's get going this weekend. Of course, no Liga football, of course. We've got nothing but domestic cup competition, the Taça de Portugal. It already began by the time I dropped this episode. We saw Braga on Thursday night go to Ribordosa, which is kind of west of Porto, and they recorded a very easy 2-0 win. But they kept it easy, Ribordosa. The two goals were scored by, well, Rony Lopes scored very early for Braga, and Alvaro de Jolo scored in the second half to wrap it up. But the small club did give Braga a bit of a hard time, and again, Braga taking care of business and advancing in the cup competition. And again, what I love about this cup competition, and I know a lot of people, there's a lot of names on the list that people have never heard of and probably don't care, and you know, a lot of people probably won't. But the truth is it's such a very important thing to inner Portugal, to some of these small towns where everybody or somebody is born and goes out to play football somewhere, that the excitement continue in these small communities. And that's why in this third round, all the higher level teams, there are a few exceptions. Like, for instance, I think I saw Santa Clara is hosting a team from the fourth tier. I'm not really sure why. But everybody big is going to play at everybody's small stadium. And it's why they call it the Festa. And, you know, I always tell the story that, people in Arcos, the Valdevez, talk about the time something like, I think it was maybe 40 years ago, when Benfica and Alberto Coelho came to play Atlético, they were called at the time Atlético de Valdevez. And people remember when Alberto Coelho, who was the big, big player at that time, he's now a vice president. You probably see him at times sitting on the bench during national team games. He also managed Portugal. I think it was when Portugal had that great run in the Euro hosted by Holland and Belgium. He was a big player, and he played in this match against a team from the districts, and the area was just so excited, and that's what's going to be happening this weekend. You see, on Friday, the day I dropped this episode, we've got Benfica and the Azores taking on Lusitania. That's a very good match. Give me 1 minute here. I don't believe they're even in... they're in actually one of the smaller islands of the Azores. They're not necessarily in the same big island where Santa Clara plays. So you can only imagine the excitement. And Benfica's probably got to take two planes, one to Ponte Delgada and another one over there. You've got Portimonense taking on Covilha. And then Porto will be making the short trips to Chaves to play a team there, Vilar de Perdizes. And Porto, of course, have won something like, I think it's 14 straight matches in the Cup. Of course, they've won the last two domestic cup competitions, and this is of course one of the matches that's going to be on RTP International for those that want to catch it. And then on Saturday you have as many as 10 matches. Santa Clara playing Vianense. You've got other teams here. Let me take a look here. Let me see, are we going to be seeing any upsets? Leixões, by the way, is at home against Vitória Setúbal. There's another match where a higher level club is hosting a lower level club. But if you're asking me about predictions, and by the way, Sporting also plays Saturday night. They make the short trip to Olympio de Muscaives, and that's also a match that's on TP International. Now, last year in the third round, I think it was something like 6 or 7 clubs in the second division were eliminated, upset out of the tournament. And I think even 2 clubs, maybe 3 in the first division, were eliminated as well, some of them by second division clubs. But If you're asking me for upsets in terms of lower level beating higher level, I really like Turient, my favorite club in the second division, to beat Rio Ave. I think they've been very big disappointment. I like Sintrans from Sintra to beat Estoril Praia. That's the first match that's going to be played on Sunday. Another match that I think will be very interesting will be Canelas taking on Chaves, Canelas 2010. That is another one that I see very, very interesting. And keep an eye out on Belenenses, Gil Vicente. I think Belenenses, Gil Vicente may rest a lot of players. I think that'll be very good. One of the best matches in this cup competition is Olivarense taking on Boa Vista. Olivarense, of course, one of the top teams in the second division, taking on a Boa Vista that's been doing very, very well. I can't speak to some of these other clubs because, to be honest with you, I don't know a lot about them. One upset that we could see is the very famous club in the Lisbon area, Atletico. They're taking on Vizela. That could be another potential upset. But again, those are some of the matches that I think are to watch out for this weekend. If you get a chance, check it out. If you have the ability to watch this match this weekend, it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to see some clubs get eliminated. We're going to see some clubs win by 7-8 goals. It's kind of all over the place. But this is the beauty of football, of soccer, when they have these competitions. You know, the U.S. Open here in the United States, I don't think it captures the imagination the way it does in Europe. I don't even think that's the case in Canada. But to see these small clubs is just great. And look, my club, Atletico Los Arcos, from the fifth tier, they lost at home to a club, Atletico Malveira, who's playing another club. I think they're from the fourth tier. You know, it could have been us possibly getting to the fourth round if we had just done what we had to do. And the fact that you're so close and you don't get it, it just leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But that's going to be pretty much everything happening this weekend. And again, a very big weekend. The small clubs mostly hosting the big clubs. And those are some of my predictions as well for some of what I think is going to be happening this weekend. Let me take a look at Liga notes from around the first, second division, or as well as general Portugal. So the government of Portugal is basically doing their budget. It is, if you understand politics in Portugal, a very long process. A lot of the political parties are always going against the incumbent party to complain about things. It's on many levels a very difficult undertaking to get the final budget. But the reason why I'm bringing this up, because no, I'm not talking about politics, is that one of the things that is in this budget is that if you're a Portuguese footballer, or you're a player that you know played in Portugal, you left Portugal to go play in another place, and then you decide to come back like an Otamendi, like a Di Maria, like a Pep of Porto. There was a special thing for you that enabled you to only be taxed on half the money you earned. And that was a big thing for players. You know, if you have a chance to, first of all, come back to Portugal for play for a big three, play in the Champions League, and you have a chance to see that only half of your salary is taxed, that was a very big, big thing to attempt players to come back to Portugal. Well, that is not going to be one of the things on the budget, as I understand, and that may hurt players. I think the exception is anybody who makes under 250,000 euros. But I'd be curious to see if in a year or two from now, if we see some players reluctant to come back to play for Portugal that we should have thought, mostly because they're getting better taxes saved elsewhere. So that's an interesting development that came out this week. Also, moving on, of course, we saw João Cancelo, a reporter from The Guardian. Check it out on PortugueseSoccer.com Twitter, or of course, I keep forgetting, X. He, of course, has taken some criticism. I talked about this last week where apparently, you know, he's basically leaving training. The same people are asking for his autograph. Most of the time, they're going to be selling these things. And he got very frustrated about it. And a reporter from the Guardian newspaper wrote that João Cancelo did the biggest mistake of all. And that is he decided to say what he did in front of a camera. But if you get a chance, check out that story. But I don't blame João Cancelo for saying this. I think sometimes when you're a celebrity, sometimes when you're a footballer, you run into the same people asking you for autographs, and you know that the reason why is that they don't really want your autograph. They want to eventually sell it. It's apparently there's a big market for this. I've never personally, have ever been attracted to it. I have memorabilia at home. Some of it is not signed. I could have gotten it signed. I mean, there's a few things. I had a photo taken back in, boy, when was it? I had something taken back once of a photo when Benfica came to play at the old Giant Stadium, and João Pinto and Nuno Gomes, and I got a photo of both of them that they eventually later autographed. There's a few items like that. I got a lot of baseball and football, but for the most part, I see it as my moment. But there are a lot of people that want the autograph, and then there's people that eventually sell it. And apparently there's a lot of money in this. I've always never bought anything like that, because to me, I think anybody with a good autograph handle can create someone's autograph. And I don't know. I've never trusted, is what I'm trying to say. I don't trust that industry. I'm sure there's honest people in it, of course, but I've never trusted it. But I have my own memorabilia, and most of it is photos up on my wall. To me, that's sentimental. That's value. But there are people that do try to get autographs, that do try to sell, and there are people that want to buy it. But João Cancelo spoke out that it's the same people all the time, and they only have one motive, and that's to make money, and he got pretty tired of it. So, but this reporter was defending the fact that he shouldn't have said anything, knowing that there was a camera in front of him. But I don't blame you, João. If you're constantly being asked by the same people, next time, just keep driving. Just keep driving. I mean, that's what I would do. That's just the best way to handle it, in my opinion. Interesting thing also happened this week with, of course, Benfica has a must-win match that I'll talk about in the next half of this episode against a club from Spain, Real Sociedad. And apparently about 100 supporters from Real Sociedad basically became socios, which put them in the position to buy tickets, because these tickets tend to only be available for socios. But apparently Benfica figured it out, discovered this, and basically took the tickets away, refunded their money, but did not refund their socios fee as a punishment, which Benfica had every absolutely right to do. But that was a very interesting news about over 100 fans that thought that they were very clever, and Benfica turned out to be very clever in the end in discovering this. And look, we know in some fashion people sell their tickets that are Benfica socios. There's no doubt about it. Again, there's money to be made in these games, especially if you cannot make it. But a very interesting thing that fans got that clever and were able to do it and buy tickets. I just thought that was a very interesting news thing. Lenk Vilafranca, the club in the second division, the club closest to my team, at Arxtoval Vizhe up north, they have a new manager. They, of course, only have 1 point in the second division. 1 point after 8 matches. Horrific. I always worried about them. I think I talked about this back in the summer where, you know, in Minho, there are a lot of clubs. There are a lot of clubs in Minho, and I just didn't know if they could be competitive. I think they could be very competitive in the third division, especially in the fourth division. But in the third division, as we saw, they were very competitive, and they dropped down to the second division. But 1 point after 7 matches, because there was one weekend, there was a domestic cup competition. But 1 point after 7 matches, man, that is bad. But anyway, they have a new manager, a manager named Sergio Machado. He formerly used to manage at Trofense, which is not too far from there. And he's going to be taking over for manager Antonio Barbosa, who apparently has not done well. So we definitely had a manager change there. We also had a lot of manager changes going on. Of course, we know in the first division. Give me 1 minute here. I thought I had this prepared on my phone. And of course, as you would know it, when I'm preparing to do this podcast, one of the things that I was going to talk about wasn't available. But as far as managers go, of course, we know. In the first division, Moreno resigned from Vitoria. He later got hired by Chaves, and he's doing a fantastic job. Paulo Tura took over for Vitoria Guimarães. He was later replaced by Alvaro Pacheco, who left Estoril, and then he winds up getting a quick job being hired over by Vitoria. And then we also saw, of course, when Alvaro Pacheco left Estoril, Vasco Seabra, who used to manage Marítimo last year, he took over. So a lot of people ask me, well, why are there always the same managers in Portugal? And there's a very simple reason for it. There's not a big budget to work with. You know that you're not playing sometimes for European competition birds. You're just playing to try to get to the middle of the pack. And there's a reality financially that you know, and that these managers know about managing in Portugal. Whereas, let's say if you're in England or Spain, there's expected to be more results from you. And I think that's why clubs, you know, a lot of these players know the same agents. They know the players in the Liga. It's easier to bring in someone that knows the Liga as opposed to bring in someone totally from another country that has to learn everything. And look, sometimes when you're Benfica and Roger Schmidt, it works at that level because chances are Roger Schmidt already knew about a lot of the Benfica players from international duty. But when it comes to a lot of these smaller clubs in Portugal, it's just not really that easy. And that's why there's a lot of clubs. But there was a change in the second division. Villaverdense did change their manager, which, you know, anytime you have bad results, it's usually the international break where managers will be fired and they will hire new managers. Let's move on to women's football. Let me give you a women's football preview. Obviously, the big story this week is that Benfica women have qualified for the group stage of the Champions League. This is great news for Liga BPI to have a club be playing in the biggest competition in terms of women's football in Europe. Benfica just really did very well to get there. And of course, now Benfica continues to lead the first division in Portugal, undefeated after four matches with 12 points. Braga sits in second place in the women's table with 10 points. And a bit of a surprise with Sporting. They've already dropped 5 points. They only sit in fifth place, and of course, there's still plenty of football to go. This weekend's action gets going on Saturday. You've got Sporting at home to Turiense. You've got Villaverdense, whose women's team is doing a little bit better than the women's team, Villaverdense, is struggling like the men. They don't even have any points after four matches. But they're going to be at home to a very good Braga team. Benfica plays on Sunday. They'll be going up north to play Fama, Família Com. And again, women's football, 12 clubs. I love this name, Racing Power FC. They are in relegation with only 3 points. They're in the relegation zone. That wraps up part one of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast.
E vai o dono disto tudo. Sete na camisola, golo!
Part two of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. Welcome back. Like I always do at this part of the episode, I just want to take the opportunity to say thank you, whether you're listening for 10 minutes, whether you're listening for the whole episode. Really means a lot to me. And again, if you're brand new, this is your weekly Portuguese soccer football expert. I have been following Portuguese football for over 25 years. I've seen the different generations. I can speak to it with a very good perspective. And again, I believe I'm objective, although, of course, in Portugal, no one believes in objective or believes anyone could be objective. But that's what I do here. And again, if you're listening for the first time, please give it a follow on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes. I also put up the audio on YouTube for those that want to listen to it on YouTube. And again, I just want to say thank you. Muito obrigado for giving me the opportunity every week to sort of review and preview the week in our Portuguese football. But let's get going here with part two. And obviously the big thing to talk about, of course, is the Champions League. It's a very big week for Benfica, a very, very big match for Benfica. Last year, they won their group on goal difference, if I recall, with PSG. You know the fall that they had and how well they did. And this year it's been a bit different. Benfica's already had something like 3 losses. Already before we even went into the month of October. But Benfica sits in last place in Group D, and they are going to be playing Real Sociedad at home. The group right now, still attainable. It's not out of reach. Real Sociedad and Inter with 4 points each. Red Bull Salzburg, which gave Benfica that really ugly home loss in match day one, has 3 points. And Benfica will basically be playing. Now, this match is going to be played on Tuesday of next week. By the way, let me just also say that next Tuesday, you've got Benfica Real Sociedad, and of course, you've also got Braga playing Real Madrid that night. Both these matches are at 2000 hours, 8 o'clock in Portugal, 3 o'clock for a lot of us on the East Coast of the United States. But I got one complaint about this. I understand it's Real Madrid. I know Real Madrid. Probably people want to see it in prime time, but, you know, it kind of sucks to see two Portuguese teams, and I realize that going to happen a lot, but they could have put the Benfica match at 17:45, or they could have put the Braga-Real Madrid match, especially even more so Braga-Real Madrid at 17:45, because first off, as much as Real Madrid is the heavy favorite here, obviously they're going to be playing in Braga that's sold out, but for a club like Real Madrid, this is just another game. For Braga, this could be one of the most historic games in history. I think Braga is going to give them a good game. I think this would have been a great game to kind of start the week off with Portuguese football. I mean, I know that, what is that, Inter is playing Red Bull Salzburg, and Galatasaray is playing Bayern Munich at that early time. But I think this Braga game, it's just a shame that in Portugal, people have to decide between the Benfica game and the Braga game, is I guess what I'm really trying to say here. But it's very simple for Benfica. They got to win. They need the 3 points. If they don't win or they drop any points, then it's really all about the Europa League, because I don't know, even though there's 3 matches left and it's still mathematically possible, I just don't know if Benfica is going to have what it takes, especially having to still play Inter. And they still got to go to Red Bull Salzburg, which we all know what they did. And it's not easy to go play a La Liga club in Spain. So Benfica really needs the 3 points. They do that. They give themselves some hope to stay in the race for the top two. Benfica needs players like João Mário to step up. They're having a hard time replacing Gonçalo Ramos, I think. But I think Petr Musa is a player that can take care of business for them. They just got to be playing a little bit better. They just got to be playing a lot better. Di Maria, I believe, is 50-50 for this match. I think he's 50-50 for this weekend. So we'll see what happens. Braga, they should have won or at least taken a point against Napoli at home. They didn't, but then they did go to Union Berlin with that tremendous comeback win. And they're in the hunt. They're in the hunt, and they're playing at home against Real Madrid. I think if you're Braga, this is the game of your lives, the match of your lives. Tickets are going to be very expensive for this match. If Braga could pull out a draw, this would be a great night for Braga. It's not going to be one of the best nights in history, but certainly it will be there. Now, if they beat Real Madrid and Real Madrid is fielding all their star players, then this could be one of their best nights, in my opinion, the best night since they qualified for the Europa final back in 2011. So we'll see what happens. But Napoli is playing at home to Union Berlin, and that could be a dangerous match because they could jump out and get 6 points. And that would be why Braga needs to try to get a point from Real Madrid to try to stay near the top. And this is, of course, a match that's being played on Tuesday. Now, Wednesday, I still feel very comfortable about Porto finishing in the top two. Very disappointing result against Barcelona. You cannot lose 1-0 at home to a big club with all these great young players that you're going to try to sell 70, 80 million. You can't lose at home. You got to get that point against Barcelona, but they didn't. But they're going to be going to Belgium to play Royal Antwerp. I believe this match is also sold out, so there's going to be a lot of Belgium fans here. Porto, I still believe they're going to finish top two, but I see Porto coming away with the 3 points here. And again, I think Porto is going to be in great shape for this group. Conceição is going to play probably a few starters on Friday in the Cup match, but he's going to pretty much be saving a lot of his best players to play in this match because, one, every time you win, it's worth millions of dollars. And two, if you win, you only cement yourself at the top. And I think if you're Porto, you want to get top two right away as soon as possible so that perhaps you could rest some of your players later on. Not to mention the fact you still have got some big Liga matches, including the Clásico coming up this year and things like that. So this is why they've got to start worrying about that now and try to take care of business early. Certainly, Porto is in a better position to qualify right now than I would say between Braga and Benfica. Europa League, we obviously know the very disappointing result with Sporting losing at home. It was their first loss for this current season in any competition. Right now, Atalanta from Italy is in first with 6. Sporting is level in second place with Sturm Graz. But since Sporting beat Sturm Graz, they have the advantage there. And the team from Poland, Rakow, is in last place with 0 points. Sporting will be making the trip. And they are the 17:45 match on Thursday. So they'll be playing early. And they'll be going to Poland. And by the way, one of the reasons why teams sometimes like playing early, it means they can fly back at night and get back at home at a decent hour. But this is a big result. Sporting needs the 3 points. Again, my question all the time is when you're playing a weaker team, will Ruben Amorim play everybody? Is he going to give two or three players rest? I've heard Rincon might be in the mix to start. But this is important, I think, again, for Sporting. Again, this is a competition that Sporting can go far. Atleta is a very good team, but I think Sporting has a chance here to do something really nice. Sturmgrass, very competitive team, but I really don't believe they're just as good as Sporting. So Sporting on Thursday, big opportunity to get to 6 points and, of course, take care of business. Let me go to my big four report, and I'm going to start off with Braga, of course, got off to a great start beating the club that they played, Ribadorsa, 2-0. Braga, of course, has already sold out their match against Real Madrid. Bruma's value, it was a bit of an article this past week that Bruma, who I'm still surprised hasn't been called to the national team, but you know what? It's the perfect player that should be playing against Liechtenstein. A player like Bruma should be the one playing against Liechtenstein. I'd be curious to see if he'll get the call up next time. But again, Bruma's value, there was a big story reported that Braga and Bruma has seen his value skyrocket. And of course, we all know that he scored the big goal to get him into the Champions League. But Braga is firing on all cylinders. They played much like they did last time before their Champions League match. They played that Thursday before, although I remember, of course, we had the big match on Friday in the Luge, of course. But I remember, you know, that they played on that Thursday to avoid the big match on Friday between Benfica Porto. But Braga, again, plays on Thursday. Gives them an extra day to rest to prepare for Real Madrid. Braga, of course, as you know, they're building their own athletic facilities. It's going to be a big, big, I don't know if you've ever seen the drone footage of it. It's spectacular. I just think Braga, for me, big four. I know some of you don't like that. I just think it's big four all the way. Benfica report, João Neves is getting all the attention in Portugal. There was even a capa by the Record that said that Roberto Martinez, you know, Roger Schmidt, and everybody just loves João Neves, and he's getting the big treatment. And of course, again, like I say, this is the time of the year when the Portuguese newspapers pick up the phones from the agents. Again, this is why Portuguese agents, in my opinion, are the best in the world, because, you know, you're seeing him, you're seeing Diomand, Diego Costa is getting some attention. All these young players, Gonçalo Inácio, are all starting to get the newspaper attention. Fans are starting to get excited. Of course, why? If, you know, I realize the clubs need the money, and you know my argument, I'm not going to stick to it. If you want to hear it, you know, episode 192. But it's happening again. João Neves is getting a lot of attention. Of course, he got his senior debut with the national team, coming on as a late sub against Bosnia Herzegovina. Di Maria was in the news. Apparently, there's some interest from his old club Rosario in Argentina, but he said that he wanted to come back because he wanted to live in Lisbon. He enjoyed his first time at Benfica so much. And apparently, the newspapers, per what they're saying, he's just very happy to be back. And it's been a great signing for Benfica. Definitely one of the three best signings for Benfica. Let me tell you something, Di Maria. If he's healthy, they're going to really need him against Real Sociedad. They're going to need a few goals from him. But he did announce, Di Maria, that he's going to retire after the Copa America next summer. And another big news, Gonçalo Guedes, of course, he's been having some injuries. He did some interview and basically says that he wants to stay at Benfica after his loan expires with Wolves. Wolves spent some money on him. I don't see how he's going to be able to go to Benfica without Benfica spending money. And I think Benfica's going to spend 10, 15 million on getting a player that they could eventually sell for 50, 60 million. I don't think Guedes is in the position to be sold again for 50, 60 million, or even much less 45, which is, I believe, what he was sold the first time. Porto news, of course, big news this week. Pinto da Costa, of course, their president of, God, he's been there, what, 35, 40 years, been a leader of this club. He basically has been coming out, a lot of people wondering if he's worried about Andres Villas-Boas running against president against him. A lot of people asking the question about whether or not he's going to be able to win again. And if you listen to his sarcastic remarks, he is so calm and cool. He is probably one of the people in Portugal that, when it comes to talking to the press, always gives the press that great headline. And he says that he is not worried. I believe the elections are next April, so they'll be very curious to see what's going to happen with that. Also in the news, Inter is eyeing Tereme. Tereme apparently doesn't want to renew. There's talk that maybe Inter may go after him in January. We'll see what happens. You know, Porto does have a lot of players that could step up, but the problem is Taremi's been so consistent. I think he has scored against like every club in the first division except his former club, Rio Ave, that losing him in the middle of the season would be a gut punch to Conceição, much in the way they lost Luis Diaz a few years ago in January. But that's been in the news. And then there was also, I'm not sure if I mentioned this last week in my Big Four report, apparently there's a big North American company, the media didn't reveal it, that's very interested in doing a big deal with Porto, as well as naming rights. Naming rights are the next big opportunity for a club to maybe get 10 million a year, 15 million a year, you know. For some of these clubs, they want to be making more than that per year. But, I mean, even here in America, stadiums don't get more than 10, 50 million a year. They get them maybe a 100 million deal over 10 years or something like that. But Porto apparently may be leading the way among the big clubs in Portugal for a naming rights deal. Estádio Dragão is a beautiful name. But at the end of the day, slapping a sponsor on and picking up an extra 10 or 15 million. And by the way, this is interesting also because remember, Porto is in the hole of something like 35, 40 million or something like that. So I think Porto is going to be looking for some creative ways to bring in money. And putting a logo as the stadium name is a very long way. You don't have to worry about selling a player. You don't have to worry about buying a player. You just get money to change the letterhead, to change the name of the stadium. I just think it's easy money, and they are in a bit of a financial predicament where they're going to probably need that type of money. Sporting, the big story is that their defender, Saint-Just, he has been a player that has had nothing but injuries, and apparently he was supposed to be tested last week with the B team. That didn't happen. Be curious to see if he's going to play in the cup match against the team from the districts. That seems to be a possibility. Such a great player. He is one of the fastest players in the Liga. People have timed him, but he's just had these nagging injuries, which just haven't been very good. But Sporting is doing well. First place in the Liga with 19 points. They drew a team from the districts. They don't even have to travel very far to play them. I got to tell you, man, a lot of things are going great for Sporting other than that Europa loss last time out. A lot of things are going good for Sporting. The biggest question with Sporting is, with so many of their players getting attention, are they going to be able to keep them during this transfer window if somebody comes along with a 50 million offer? Which, by the way, for a club like Sporting is very hard to turn down. Or do they do this next summer? And then next summer, you have to find new players to replace them. And we obviously all know what happened when they sold Mateus Nunes and, you know, they've sold other players. It's hurt this club. But Sporting seems to be on the bounce back, and I think that that's something to think about. Let me talk now about my favorite club before the mailbag, and that is, of course, if you're listening for the first time, my favorite club in Portugal is in the fifth tier. It's my hometown club, my family's hometown club, and that, of course, is Athletico dos Arcos. And I'm so happy to tell you that after 7 match days, they are in first place with 19 points. 7 matches, 6 wins, and only 1 draw, no losses, plus 13 goal differential. Them and Munson are both in first place with 19 points. And then Cordial Lance and that crap team from Punta Barca, our rival, both have 18 points. But Athletico dos Arcos back at the top. Last year they were in the top until January, and then everything just fell apart, and then their manager left. It was awful. They just could not get up to the top. But Athletico dos Arcos, my club from the fifth tier, is doing a fantastic job. There is no football this weekend because of the domestic cup competition, which unfortunately, if they had won their last match at penalty kicks, they would have still been playing. But they are off, and then when they do come back next week, they'll be playing a team near the bottom, which is very good news, a team from Melgaço called Milgacense, which has a terrific little football stadium there, if you've ever checked it out. Some first division clubs train there during the summer. But Athletico dos Arcos will be making that short trip to Melgaço. Melgaço is also a stadium where if Athletico dos Arcos was playing a bigger club, this is probably the stadium that they would rent to play a bigger club. I don't think they could play it in the Cutada, but if they were still in the Portuguese Cup, that is. But Athletico dos Arcos is doing very, very, very well. Mailbag right now. Let me talk about some of my listener questions I got. First off, on Twitter from Ballham, question, what happened to the club B-Sad? Are they gone now? My understanding with, and of course they used to be Belenenses Sad and they changed it to B-Sad, is they were going to be merging with another club. I think it might have been Vila Franquense, which is now named AVS. And what happened was is the merger didn't approve, and Vilafranca became this other club, and they were kind of left alone. And I don't believe they've got a team this year playing in the districts of Lisbon. I believe next year they're going to come back. But it has been one of the most incredible downfalls going from the first division. Remember that match when with the COVID and they played with like seven players? And obviously we know about their controversy with Bill and Nance's. And I've always had a soft spot in my heart for them because, you know, I'm thinking of the players, I'm thinking about the coaches, and I'm thinking about a club that's brand new that you can build your own history with. But they got relegated. They got relegated again, and now they are, last I heard, and if I'm wrong, please correct me out there, they're all not coming back until next season in the districts. They've got to start all over. So that's got to be tough for the investors of the club. It's just a very, very, very tough decision. So that's what I know of right now. Got a great question on Facebook from Ruisa Brandon. Mr. Neves, I recall in one of your podcasts some time ago saying Fernando Santos was a good coach and he's not getting the respect he deserves. Wondering if you still feel the same. We have had the talent to win much more and we had with a lot less heartache, but Santos kept making bad lineup decisions. I'm so glad he's gone. Listen, let me say this, Rui. First off, let's not forget that when Fernando Santos took over as manager, he took over for Balu Bentu. And if I remember, we got off to a bad start in qualifying. I think we even had an ugly result against Albania. And he resurrected the club. And eventually later, although it wasn't the prettiest because I think we drew in our three group matches at Euro 2016 in France. But we did win a Euro. We did win a Nations League. And he got some incredible effort out of Cristiano Ronaldo. But I thought he needed to be respected for that, and I thought he needed to be respected for the fact that at least we were still playing in major competitions, although we barely made it going through the playoffs for, you know, for the World Cup. So I thought back then he deserved some respect. But obviously, and I think, again, if you're a weekly follower, you know that as time went along, I complained about the fact that the players weren't responding to him, players like Bruno Fernandes in the very beginning. It seemed like Cristiano Ronaldo was saving him. But at the end of the day, it was Fernando Santos' undoing to be taken out of this club. And so I still think he's a decent manager. I mean, he's done very well in his career. He's managed the big three. He's won titles in Portugal. He did very well in Greece. Let's not take how he ended with the national team and just say that he had a bad career. Because look, he has managed in World Cups. He's managed in Euros. He's had a good career like JJ. A lot of people want to discard JJ. They've had a good career. Maybe it doesn't meet your expectations, but they've had a decent career. Now, was he the great manager for Portugal? I would say no, because I think we still left a lot on the table, and he did make a lot of bad lineup decisions. But most importantly, he didn't correct the fact that they wouldn't score with all that talent, and that was like a really big problem. So I think he was a good manager. But toward the end, yeah, he was awful for Portugal, and I think we all know that. Great question, Rui. I really hope that answers what you were saying, but that is just my opinion. Got a question here from Jose. Jose is writing from Philadelphia. Jose Gomes. Am I reading that right? Jose Gomes. And basically the question he's asking me is, oh, have you ever been to your Liga matches in Portugal, Liga? And if you could, can you tell us which is the one that was the best of all the ones you've ever seen? Yes. The one that I remember the most was a Clásico in the old Estádio do Dragão. Fernando Santos, by the way, was manager of Porto. Graham Souness was manager of Benfica. Remember, Benfica had players like Dean and Scott Minto. It was a bit of an English influx of players. And Porto won 2-0. Goals by Mario Jardel and Chainho. Chainho, by the way, has an interesting Instagram account if you want to follow him on Instagram. And what happened that day was I walked up to the stadium. I bought a ticket, believe it or not. And I think it was a season ticket holder that sold it back to the club. But I went up there and I bought the ticket. And I got to watch this match from behind the goal. It wasn't necessarily midfield. But Porto Benfica, I'm trying to remember when that was. That might have been, I'm thinking that might have been 98 or 99. The year escapes me right now, but some of you might remember it was 2-0. Graham Souness was the manager for Benfica. Fernando Santos was the manager for Porto, and Porto won that night 2-0, and it was an incredible night to be able to see a Clásico and just the emotion of the crowd. I've been to other matches in Portugal. I went to see Boavista-Gil Vicente match. I've gone to see an Estoril match. I've gone to see a League Cup match between Oriental and Freamund. At the time, Daniel Ramos, who's now managing in the first division, was the manager for Freamund. But yeah, I've seen, I went to see a Benfica match the year Boavista won. I should have probably put that up there as one of my best matches. It was 0-0, 0-0 between Boavista and Benfica. This was the old stadium. This was the year that Boavista won. Petit was playing, if I remember, for Boavista, and Jaime Pacheco was the manager of Boavista. And this was at the old Estádio do Dragão, man. This was old stadium that used to fit something like 120,000 people. That's always been great. But those are some of the matches I've seen. I've seen national teams. I've seen the matches at the Euro. I was at the match when Portugal beat Spain. So I've seen my fair share of matches, yes, and those are some of the ones that come up and are sentimental to me, and I really appreciate this. Let me read one more comment here. This actually wasn't a question, but it's from Mike on Instagram, YouTube. Portugal has qualified. I'm not used to this. Usually we struggle. We need calculators. Well done, Martinez. Just like you, I wasn't convinced by his hiring. But he has done well. But next summer, he will be judged on the tournament. Oh, boy, that is true. Ronaldo's on fire. Is the man really 38? LOL. And then he makes a comment to me. So this is really, I guess, more of a comment from a listener. And by the way, you could send me your comments to read, too, instead of asking questions, if you would like. And this is about selling players and some of the complaints I've had. People got to realize that Portuguese club need to sell their players. That's how they survive. Ever since the Champions League came into being, it's been a tale of two cities, rich or poor. When I was a kid and watching my Benfica in the old European Cup, it was a totally different beast from today. If the big three want to compete with the elite, they need the money. That is so, so true, Mike. And thank you for your comments. And on that note, folks, I'm going to wrap up episode 193 of the PortugueseSoccer.com podcast. As always, thank you so much for listening. Again, got a listener comment, got a listener question, peacesoccercom@gmail.com, or identify your question on peacesoccercom on Twitter, peacesoccercom on Facebook, or on YouTube, and I will read out your comments or your questions in next week's edition. Again, folks, take care of yourselves, take care of your families, and I'll talk to you next week. Ciao, everybody.